Yeah.
Remember that they had one of the rooms downstairs. They decided to have us kids, instead of running to the Iron Copper Settlement, which they really didn't want as competition, so they put the Zerf Pittler, they had him with a social worker, and they brought him into it. And we had some small carrying tables, you know, you play carrying, you know, and they had the ping pong tables we had there too, and to try to keep the kids there instead of running to the Iron Copper Settlement. But that never materialized into anything. We had some very bright people who taught, very bright people who taught at the Hebrew Institute. And then I enjoyed my schooling there, and that's where, as a matter of fact, the first time I read Shalom Aleichem was in Hebrew. The stories of Shalom Aleichem in Hebrew.
Could you do it today?
I could do it, yeah. It would be hard. Really hard. It would be. I'm not knowledgeable. Now
in Hebrew, you mean?
Yeah.
You have no difficulty with Jewish, with Yiddish.
I have no difficulty with Yiddish. In Hebrew, I would have that. Although, now and then I talk in Hebrew with my granddaughter.
Yeah.
And,
wonderful. How do they know?
They live there.
In Israel?
Yeah, my granddaughter was born there.
Where in Israel?
Well, they were born. She was born in Carmiel in 1969.
Oh, you want to go live there?
Huh? Well, they're living here now.
Oh.
Maybe they were there for about 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, now let's talk. We were, you were active in labor Zionist. You got married to Sylvia Feldman. Now, where did you live? You moved to the hill?
You're jumping into the 40s, and that's a really different world.
Okay.
Because
we're still 1930.
Yeah, we're still in the 30s, because in 1941 I went into the army.
Okay.
Because I went to different epoch in my life. I don't know the question you want to ask me again, more about the 30s, if I can.
Weren't you head of one of the Zionist groups, the executive director?
Well, that came after.
Okay.
I recall that we also did something which in 1939, under Mayor Mishram, we decided we had a Jewish Youth Council, and we decided to have a Jewish World's Fair. And we would have a small little thing, and we picked what their organizations were doing, or something was going on. Jewish World Spirit joined where Jews came from, Poland or Russia. Well, it was supposed to be, it started off as a youth project, and next thing you knew, it became a citywide project, and all the adults, Jewish organizations became involved, Hadassah, Pine Women, Council of Jewish Women. We had this big, tremendous exhibit which exhibited the various groups in the Y, and of course we had a dance, and it was a very, and I was the chairman of this big doing, we involved the Carnegie Library to do research. It was very, it was like, at that time, if you recall, it was somewhat near the World's Fair that was held in New York, which was the Jewish World's Fair in Pittsburgh.
Was that
then
37?
39. Then I decided, you know, I was hanging around Film Row, trying to make a dollar selling advertising, printing to the exhibitors, and one day that somebody told me they wanted to see me, and one of the distributors wanted to see me, and I missed him. I couldn't, you know, I did see him. So already said, "I'm going to offer you a job selling film." I hired this other fella, and you were not around. This was just for And then I decided, as well, maybe my other distributors, Lou Lefton, his nephew, Milt Lefton, had Monarch Pictures, and they had a lot of films, so I asked them, would they mind if I would take some of the film and try to sell it on a commission basis? And I said, yes. So then I became a film salesman and started to peddle some film. And tried to make, I was making 30%, and then I was starting to build up a little bit of a following. There was one film, I had two films, and I thought maybe I'd, and then I was drafted in 1941, and that was the end of my selling a film.
Where did you go? You went to, what was your area? How far did you travel with these films?
I went in the Pittsburgh area. Well,
you went to the various
theaters and tried to have them book the show. Which was like the good movies, then, remember? The Hot Movies? Oh, no, well, I mean, those were the days of the big film. Of course, I don't think those were the days of Metro and Buenos Aires and Columbia. You mentioned the stars, you know, actually, that was the star system. But I was selling my film, I get $10, I got a lot of money for putting the show film.
You had your own car at this time?
No, I didn't have a car. I was able to, I traveled by either streetcar or one of the salesmen. I mean, if I would take a ride with them, you know, to talk, or I would see them on Film Row and try to
get a ride with them.
No, the exhibitors, talked to the exhibitors on Film Row when they came in, you know, we didn't want to buy the film. Where I finally sold the Harris Amusement Company, you know, they had a number of film theaters. And I finally saw the one film that I played in East Liberty. I arrived, you know, and I sold the Harris Amusement Company a film.
Was he in right?
No, this was another commercial picture theater. Was
in right?
No, that was not in. No. But that's they had a movie house in Miss Liberty. Next to the region, the movie house I've never seen.
So what did you do in the service?
Well, did I ever tell you about doing a puppet show?
No.
We were looking for it to do, theater business. So a couple of friends of mine from around the Y, and there's an Italian boy who was around the Y, Carmen Carnevale, and he opened up a studio. And this was on Fifth Avenue, one of the lofts in the heart of Oakland. But it's Oakland. Actually, he opened up a studio, third floor, walked up, and he was going to have that, so he had the little theater, you know. And we made our puppets there. And I was probably having Gene Klein. Gene Klein, by the way, now is in Israel with his wife, Maria. My name was Hamlin. She was a Jewish school teacher, and they're living now in Israel. He became a psychologist, went to New York for a degree, and they're now retired living in Israel. So we formed this company, and they made puppets, and they did shows, Hansel and Gretel, So I came along with an idea. I said, well, what we might do, why don't we book this show to the movie motion picture house, you know, on Saturday morning for kiddies. We'll try. That's right before Easter, you know, we'll try to get some books. We couldn't make a buck up in the third of the loft up there, you know, people are paid. And don't forget, I had my home, but I know that Gene and Carmen, I mean, they had no the means of income, you know, and some of them slept there, you know. So I remember going to a Harris house, and this was right across the 6th Street Bridge. There was a movie house there now. Was there a movie house there now? I can't think of the name of the movie house there. No longer there, the Harris house. And I recall going there and talking to the manager, and I sold him the idea that we'll do this, so we should play a puppet show, you know, before Easter and so on and so forth. I said, well, they will we'll play it on a cooperative basis, you know, partly. And whatever costs the advertising, that'll come off the top, and then we'll split 50-50. We come in with the puppet, with the marionettes, actually, you know, our marionettes, we don't have to deal with marionettes, and the spade is for the marionettes. And I went in. So I remember, so we had the window cards printed, passed them all around, north side, you know, and so we arrived at the Saturday morning. I think Mitchell was about 25 cents out of the thing. I'm sure, well, Andrew, bring all the stuff over, the marionettes and the stage and the actors, and the show was supposed to be at 10 o'clock in the morning or 11 o'clock. And we get there early and I set it up and we're waiting for these kids to come. No kids. About 10 kids show up at Saturday morning, and so we right away went into a deficit, and we had to scrape together some money to pay the printer, you know, for the advertising, you know. we hired somebody to take somebody over in a car or something, you know, all the stuff, you know. And that was the beginning and end of our producing marionette shows.
You're an entrepreneur.
Yeah. Those things happen. You know, it's interesting, though. Somebody once said to me, the line between failure and success is a very thin line. It can go either way. And one never knows whether it's going to be successful or whether it's going to be a failure. One of the things that's happened in my life.
You said something about meeting your wife at the
in the organization.
She was a Friedman?
No, Feldman.
Feldman.
Feldman. Yeah. Yeah.
What family was she? Was she
Feldman.
Neighbors?
They were. She had a mother was an attorney and Myra. She had another one called with a big insurance man here in town who was in Feldman. Matter of fact, this insurance man, he was the one that was put to help Dick Powell, very close to Dick Powell. So I met her and married her after going into the service. We got married.
So where were you in the service?
Well, I went in and 1941, and then I went to the field artillery, and when Pearl Harbor took place, I went to the different house in the Signal Corps, and I was disqualified for overseas. I had problems, apparently problems were not severe enough for them to discharge me, and although I was hospitalized about 9 times, and I think what they referred to as a very nervous condition, and I get sick, and so I wound up in about 9 different hospitals. I was taken in Pittsburgh while I was when my daughter was born.
Mm-hmm.
I was stationed in Pittsburgh, and I wound up in Fort Bragg, Mitchell Field, I wound up in Buffalo, and we were in Buffalo, we came out of the Air Force, Signal Corps in the Air Force, working with the plane spotters. Then I got married in 42, and then March of 42, and my daughter was born, but Pittsburgh was part of the Buffalo region, so I was also came down to Pittsburgh to work with the civilians here. Spotting the aircraft that were flying over the area here, all of Western Pennsylvania and also towards Buffalo. Planes were not supposed to, well, we had the civilians man the observation post and report all kinds of were coming to the area. And then went back to Buffalo and we lived in Buffalo for a while. And then when they got away with the observation post, I went to the Delaware in the Air Corps there. And then from there, I did security work for the than it was. I was transferred to an area outside of Hyde Park. And we lived in the roadhouse. There was only four of us there. And we used to go up to this, my shifts, we got this tall tower, you know, about maybe 60 feet up in the air. And all the planes that were coming over, we had to call in because that was a restricted area. Near Hyde Park. And one of the highlights of that was when Roosevelt threw a Christmas party for the soldiers up there. So we were invited to the party, and I remember bringing my wife up in Pittsburgh. It was winter. It was the second night of Christmas. It was the second night of the bulge, you know, that Patton was going through. And it was during our Christmas time, so we went up to Hyde Park and these GI trucks and my wife came up from Pittsburgh and went in there, and the library, and we had a person talk to us, and then an incident took place. Very interesting that, after he had spoken to us, where they had a Secret Service man there, and you can only sit so far, that imagine every line you could go beyond that, imagine every line. He sat on the floor and listened to Roosevelt talking again. But after that was a reception line, and we had, I think, a Filipino was handing out cake and ice cream. And Eleanor Roosevelt, what a beautiful woman she was. I'm not talking about facial beauty, but the way she walked, she didn't applaud, she just floated through the air, and she moved her arms so beautifully, and she would give each of us a GI handkerchief, which was khaki, you know. And so I said, with another handkerchief, so I had a Nestor Brook pen on me, and I walked over to her and I said, Mr. Roosevelt, would you mind if you autographed the pants? He said, no, not the one. And she got there, and she started signing her name, which I have to this day, I have it framed, a handkerchief signed by Eleanor Roosevelt. And so the pen was leaking, and so the other GIs were there, they saw her signing, so they got in line. So I saw the ink was running over her hand, and I said, pardon me, Mr. Roosevelt, you might have had my pen, so I saved it for the ink on her hand, it's got on my fingers, and that was a very interesting experience that I had.
Did you do any drama work or anything theatrical while you were in the service?
No, I didn't have a chance to. I wanted to, but there was no opportunity.
Special service.
I could not get into special service. I tried, I could not.
So you were a round peg in a square hole.
Yeah, you're right. I wanted to. I was in Dover, Delaware, and I went up to Nasbury Park for a while. I was in East Hampton, which is Montauk Point. I was in Montauk Point. With the radar. Great radar. I was there for the radar. Mm-hmm. I was also in North Truro, just 6 miles this side of Provincetown.
From the Cape.
Yeah, then I was there too. And I had my wife and daughter.
Where you were, Air Force?
Yeah, Air Force. It was a plane spotter.
Was that the first Air Force for that?
No, this was dealing with the radar. Looking at the scope and I recalled when I went down to Fort Bragg. I was in for the draft. I recall that. Got involved with it was called Fayetteville. I met the Hadassah women. I remember teaching the Hadassah women some Hebrew songs. You should hear these Hadassah women who came from the South with a Southern accent singing Hebrew songs. And the lady that got to know was responsible, she had a general store. And I remember saying, I got to go there and something about this self merchandising store. I didn't want to pay for it. I would put on my civvies and go there. And then also when I was stationed in Buffalo, I tried to help organize a design trip for the Young Youth Movement called Huddling In. And in Buffalo, helping with the Jewish community. Wherever I was stationed, I sought to meet the Jewish community and establish some sort of relationship with them. Even in Dover, Delaware, I met a Jewish farmer, and he had a lot of land, acreage there. And he invited me over to his house on a Friday night and on a farm and for the Shabbat. So all in all, it was an interesting experience, and I spent 51 months in the Army. It took us 4 years. And of course, after our daughter was born, we got married in the spring.
How many children do you have?
Just one daughter. She has two children.
And you came out of service around 45?
No, she had 46.
46.
And it was 46 that came out. It was a medical discharge. I had couldn't take IV.
But you had enough months. Yeah.
Yeah, but that was I took sick and I came home for my father-in-law's funeral.
Whose father-in-law?
Yeah. And I couldn't take it, and I had a breakdown. And I was in Dishon up in Buckley, that was the hospital, the only hospital. And then I remember Christmas Day. I got to leave the Christmas vacation. We decided to go to New York, my wife and I, and went to New York. And before Christmas, at least for Christmas, we were in New York. I got a telephone call. My mother passed away.
Oh, man.
And so
where was your mother living then?
Pittsburgh.
In the hill?
No, they lived in Squirrel Hill. We moved from the hill to East End, and my late wife also lived in the same street, four doors up, and I was living in East End for maybe over a year. I lived there for only about a year or so, because I went to Ghana, and my dad bought me a piece of property on Squirrel Hill, and they lived there.
And when you came out of service in January of 46, what did you do then?
Well, I came there. I got out of the Army. I went to live with my mother-in-law on Higer Street there in the Stand. And I didn't know what I was going to do. I might mention, you asked me about my learning, what did I learn, what I get my education. During the Army, I had an opportunity to do a lot of reading. And that's when I started reading non-Jewish life. And much more stuff than I've done here before. And accumulated a library of books, and reading with the Zionists and the history of Zionists. About my job, I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't know what I was going to do. I was equipped to come back to civilian life. But I had no profession. I recall I went back on film row and gave me one of the distributors there, well, through Harry Hendel, said, okay, I'll give me a job selling film, and that's working for this company. And since I inherited my father-in-law's car, so I had the means of transportation. And they offered me a salary that was nothing to speak of, when you're a salesman for motion picture film, you travel, you leave money, you come back Friday, stay in motels or hotels or rooms, you know, and you, and I was not psychologically equipped, I mean, to go on the road and sell the motion picture film. So I only, you know, after about a couple of weeks, and I said, this is not for me, and I quit the job, and then, what was I supposed to do then? I don't know what to do, and I remember somebody came in one year, a friend of my, young fella whose parents were very friendly with my dad, and of course I got to know him too, and he was selling fur coats, and so I took him around to some of the furriers and showed him, you know, and he sold some of these fur coats, and so, but I didn't make any money, I did that as a favor to him, and then my dad said, well, why don't you, maybe I'll sell paintbrushes, says my dad, that was in the paintbrush business. The whole here, you know, had an uncle in New York who made paintbrushes for a lot of painter's tools, not the tool that the homeowner bought, and made a pure china bristle. So I got some paintbrushes from him, and I started to sell, calling on some of the paint stores. And my dad made a connection for me with some of the brush manufacturers for homeowner paintbrushes. Very inexpensive, you know. And so I remember we ordered $300 worth of these paintbrushes, small ones. And I remember putting them in a car, and I went around, and I got myself a little receipt book, and I went into the store, and I said, the cash and carry thing, you know, and I got some drawers with some paintbrushes, and then paintbrushes and a paint sundry, and I was one of the first introduced to paint drawers in Pittsburgh, and that was by 1948. So, I went into the operator out of the house, kept the merchandise in the garage with my mother. I kept it in the cellar of my mother-in-law's house. The merchandise, and when we built our own house up here where I'm being interviewed now, I kept the merchandise in the garage and operated out of our house. And, I might also, going back and talking about selling, also during a period in the 30s, in the 32, I also another thing that I did, I used to sell canvas house to house for Consolidated Home Furnishing Company, and we got with a crew, and we put the blankets, the pots and pans, and so we got to these small little communities outside of Pittsburgh, Springdale and so on and so forth, and we knocked on doors and 25 cents down in a quarter a week, and that's what you pay, here's a blanket, and so on and so forth, or pots and pans, you know, and also quarter down, quarter a week. So I also did that in 1932-33. I think I also told you I sold neckties to people in the Blind Association. They would pay out to you. That was my dad and my uncle. They went to work for them, and after they went on a bit in 1931-32. So I got some neckties and went to the Association for the Blind on Craig Street, and of course some could see, partially could see, and I would sell the neckties to three for a dollar. That's what they bought. I did that in the 30s. It worked, but to make a buck.